Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Welcome, everybody, to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm your host, Jim Dolan, and today we're going out west with Paladin and Have Gun Will Travel. And following that, we have an episode of Dimension X, which is science fiction. The program's called Time and Time Again. But right now, it's John Daner and Paladin, and the program's called Fast Death.
I don't need a gun for you, mister. You're all eaten up with fear and hate. The most you can hope for now is a fast death.
Have Gun, Will Travel. Starring Mr. John Daner as Paladin. San Francisco, 1875, the Carlton Hotel, headquarters of a man called Paladin.
Mr. Paladin?
Oh, yes, Miss Wong.
You want light for a cigar?
Oh, I didn't realize I hadn't lighted it.
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
I notice you sit here a long time, study item in newspaper.
Yeah, sort of turn back the clock. Oh. This is the Hammond Sentinel, last week's edition. Now, I'll read you the item. Deathbed confession clears Ed Stacy. Dying of gunshot wounds suffered in a futile attempt to rob the Overland Stage. Oh. Joe Barnes, a former driver, confessed to another holdup 2 years ago. And exonerated Ed Stacy, who had been convicted of the crime and sentenced to a long term in prison.
Oh, so.
See, Miss Wong, 2 years ago, I brought Ed Stacy back for trial.
Oh, you have pain from conscience, but you only do job, Mr. Paladin.
That's what I've been telling myself.
Yes, you tell yourself.
But at the same time, I don't like to feel that I've been responsible for taking 2 years out of an innocent man's life.
Oh, but it's done. It's over now.
Well, I'm not so sure. Here's the rest of the newspaper report. Will Stanhope, president of the Overland Line, announced he would personally arrange for Stacy's release and expressed profound regret at the miscarriage of justice.
Oh, it's a curse.
Sounds fine, doesn't it?
Oh, Issa, very fine. Huh?
Well, that telegram you delivered to me a half an hour ago was from this same Will Stanhope. Now, what did I do with it?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, here. Listen. Need you. Life in danger. Oh. Come at once.
My, how unfortunate. Oh, what do you plan, Mr. Paladin?
Well, he says at once.
At once.
I guess I better get started.
Hello, this is Marvin Miller with another page from your American Heritage scrapbook. In the 17th and 18th centuries, newly discovered America offered breathing space for the cramped peoples of Europe. But no one could guess how rapidly the vast, unsettled wilderness could be tamed. Englishmen arriving in Jamestown and Plymouth were beset by famine, disease, and hostile Indians. They were lucky to survive at all. Populating the colonies was a slow and arduous process. But due largely to the great Puritan migration from Europe, by 1641, some 50,000 English settlers had reached North America. 75 years later, this continuous migration from Europe and the British Isles had brought the colonial population to 435,000. On the eve of the Revolution in 1775, 2.5 million people inhabited the 13 colonies, approximately one-third of the population of all Great Britain. The first federal census in 1790 disclosed that less than 3% of the population were in towns of more than 10,000. Most immigrants lived on the land, but cities were beginning to flourish. Revolutionary Philadelphia, with its 40,000 inhabitants, was the first colonial city in size. New York was second with 25,000. Boston, with 16,000, third. Charleston, the largest city of the South, numbered 12,000. America was growing. And in spite of all adversity, America was destined to continue its growth. Why? Possibly because America was a dream for freedom-loving people, then as it is today.
The trip to Hammond wasn't exactly a pleasant one. Before I reached town, my horse foundered, and I walked the last 3 miles carrying my saddle and bag. I was exhausted, but the matter seemed urgent, and I'd already wasted time, so I went directly to the Overland Stage office. Except that he appeared to have shrunk a bit, and his skin seemed to be drawn even tighter over his thin, sharp face, Will Stanhope hadn't changed much in the 2 years since I'd last seen him. I recognized the man with him as Sheriff Clyde.
Hello, Paladin.
Oh, Paladin. Glad you got here. Sit down.
I'm tired. So, whatever it is you've got on your mind, Stanhope, let's get started on it, shall we?
Paladin, he's come back for revenge.
He just came home, back to his ranch. What else would he do?
You talking about Ed Stacy?
You know about Stacy?
Read it in the paper.
Stanhope here thinks Ed's gonna be gunning for him. Boy's got a right to be sore, considering what happened. But I say if we try to make it up to him, show him we're glad he's back, he'll cool off.
I agree.
Let's wait and see, huh?
Wait for him to kill me, I suppose.
Well, all I know is I can't arrest the man for what he's thinking. Better get back to the office.
Fool. Now do you know why I sent you that wire, Paladin? I need someone to protect me.
Just what do you want me to do, Mr. Stanhope?
There's $3,000 in this envelope. If Stacy could be persuaded to leave Hammond for good.
$3,000 is a lot of persuasion.
Use whatever you have to and keep the rest. I wouldn't even care if you kept it all. As long as I never had to worry about Stacy again.
That kind of deal is out. But I'll find Stacy and talk to him in the morning.
Maybe if you saw him tonight.
I assure you I'll be much more persuasive after a night's sleep. I was just settling down to get that night's sleep when I heard someone in the hall outside my hotel room and a splintering sound as the flimsy door gave way to pressure. I made a try for my gun, but it hung just out of reach.
Paladin.
Who are you?
My name is Ben Stacy. You and me are going to have a little talk.
Ben Stacy?
We're going to have a little talk about the way you and Stanhope railroaded my brother.
Ed? I wasn't his judge and jury. I did the job I was paid for.
You're wrong, mister. You ain't been paid yet. I'm taking care of that right now.
Ben! Ben, stop it!
Stop it, you fool!
You want to kill him?
We're only trying to help you, Ed.
I know, but you go on, Ben. Go on.
I was only trying to help.
Yeah,
you.
I know. Paladin, you all right?
Yeah, I guess so. Oh, God. That was close. It was too close.
I heard you were in town. I was afraid. You see, Ben, he gets an idea somebody's trying to do me harm. It's hard to shake the idea out of him.
Well, why didn't you let him finish the job? It might have saved you some trouble.
I don't see there's any trouble between us.
There's going to be. If you don't leave Stanhope alone.
Me leave him alone?
That's right.
You got things backwards. Why don't he leave me alone?
Many a child has been warned by his parents that if he digs too deep a hole in the flower bed, he's liable to fall through to China. Well, apparently this little tale had its origin in our American folklore many years ago. And it all started when Captain Wentworth bumped into the great Sam Patch in the middle of the China Seas. The captain said, "Why, Sam, how did you get here? I thought you were drowned near the Canadian border." Sam replied, "I didn't get here at all. I dove right through.
In that there Niagara dive, I went so deep, I thought it was just a short to come up the other side. So I came out here in the China Seas. Now you just turn your ship around and I'll race you back to Boston. And if I don't beat you, then my name's not Sam Patch.
Folklore belongs to every nation's legendary past, and I guess we Americans have our share of some tall tales.
You say Stanhope is after you. Tell me about it.
When I came back, I made up my mind to forget what had happened. I didn't expect any favors. I just wanted to start from scratch. But with a fair shake.
You aren't getting a fair shake, huh?
I made this trip into town to get supplies my ranch needs. I'm going back tomorrow. My wagon is empty as it was when I came. Now, the merchant in Hammond will extend me credit. The pressure's been put to him. Stanhope carries a lot of weight around here.
Uh-huh. Here.
What's this?
It's from Stanhope. $3,000.
I don't get it.
I think I do. You're his conscience. You bother him.
His conscience? Why the price tag on it?
There's a condition.
What?
You're to leave Hammond.
How come?
Stanhope believes you're going to kill him.
Oh, I thought about it. I was going to make him pay for every rotten second.
Huh? And now?
Now, he's just a sniffling, scared little man he's not worth going to prison for. Now, take his $3,000 back to him. His conscience is going to stick around and bother him for a long time.
The next morning, I went to make my report to Will Stanhope. There was a crowd gathered in front of the Overland office. Debris littered the street. The windows were broken, and the door was ripped off its hinges. As I walked in, it sounded as though somebody were tearing the place apart. Somebody was. Big Ben Stacy was on a rampage.
Stop him! Sheriff, stop him! He's going crazy! Sheriff!
Ben, I order you to stop. Ben!
No, Clyde! Clyde, don't shoot!
You better get the cuffs on him, Sheriff, before he comes to.
Yeah. Phew, that boy really went loco.
He'd have killed me.
What happened? Somebody told me. Ben.
He'll be all right, Ed.
Sorry, Ed. Gonna have to lock him up.
Ben do this?
Yeah.
Ben's a simple guy. Easy going, as a rule. Only one thing sets him off. It's always been that way ever since we were kids.
Easy, Ed.
Ben don't like seeing anybody shove me. All right, what started him off?
Well, I gave him a letter.
A letter?
It was for you. He read it and busted loose.
Well, what was in the letter?
It was a delinquent tax notice on Ed's ranch.
You're threatening foreclosure?
For $3,000. Taxes haven't been paid for 2 years.
Well, you know why they weren't. Couldn't you have waited?
It's routine business, Paladin. I'll handle it my way.
You're handling it Stanhope's way.
Now, look
Everybody
here.
In town's handling things his way, and I'm up to here with
it. Easy there, boy.
I was willing to forget that Stanhope in this town cost me 2 years out of my life. I just wanted a chance to start over, but you won't let me. You're pushing me around, treating me like I was really a criminal.
Now, Ed, this is
a man can take just so much pushing around, Paladin. You gonna take my brother to jail?
I have to, Ed.
All right. Stanhope, we'll play this your way from now on. Since I've already put in 2 years for nothing, I got something real big coming right out of your hide.
Yeah, you heard him, Sheriff. He threatened me. I demand protection.
You'll get it when I see that you need it.
Paladin?
You didn't play straight with me. You didn't tell me you were trying to crowd Stacy out.
Well, I gave you that $3,000 for him.
After setting him up so he'd have to take it and leave town or lose everything.
I had to do it, Paladin. He would have killed me.
He didn't want any part of you. But whatever happens from now on, you can blame yourself, Stanhope. Here. Your money. Hire an army with it.
this is Marvin Miller with another page from your American Heritage scrapbook. American character and nationality were clearly emerging as early as 1775. No one can measure precisely how much the special American traits came from the infusion of non-English elements into colonial life, and how much in response to the challenge of a new environment. It's now estimated that non-English immigrants made up some 40% of the colonial population. These proportions varied throughout the colonies, of course. The Yankees of New England were about 70% English, with a liberal mixture of Scots, Scotch-Irish, Celtic-Irish, plus some French and Germans. In the South, English settlers comprised considerably less of the total, and Pennsylvania was only about one-third English. The Germans were the largest non-English group in colonial America, about 100,000 in Pennsylvania alone. The large numbers of immigrants from non-English countries, coupled with a way of life completely different from that of cosmopolitan Europe, created a distinctive American character and, to a degree, a new American language. But the English influence was definitely the strongest. One example of this influence was the popular practice of immigrants to anglicize their names, often making it difficult to determine national origins. For instance, the German Roth or Roth is confused with the English Rhodes, the German Shearer with the Scottish Shearer, the German Kohler with the British Collier. The gravestone of Dirk Kuyper reads Richard Cooper, and the Dutch Van Kouwenhoven became Conover. Yes, by 1775, the colonists were no longer English or German or Scottish or anything but Americans.
I'd had enough of Hammond. But without a horse, I was at the mercy of Will Stanhope's stage line, and I had to wait over him. It was just before dawn when I was awakened by the commotion outside on the street. I got out of bed and opened the window.
You men make a circle. Try to head them off.
Sheriff! Sheriff, up here!
Yeah?
What happened?
They just busted Ben Stacy out of jail.
Did Ed do it?
No, it wasn't Ed. It was Dan and Floyd. They worked for Ed.
Ah.
Seems like they're fixing for real trouble.
He said it, Sheriff.
Said what?
A man can take just so much pushing around. Morning, Sheriff.
Morning.
Your men bring in Stacy?
No, clean getaway. You leaving on the stage?
Yeah.
Do you know you'll be sharing your seat with a shotgun rider?
Shotgun guard riding inside? Was it something new?
Stanhope's orders.
Oh?
The trap. He figures now that Ed and Ben Stacy will hit one of the stages sooner or later. Wants it to look easy for him.
Mr. Stanhope has a talent for conniving.
Yeah, he wants to get him real bad. He even offered a reward.
Before they've done anything?
Well, it says for catching or killing anybody who tries to hold up an overland stage. Guess we know what he means. $3,000.
At the Three Forks station, we had a 10-minute stopover to change teams. I went inside to have a glass of rye. The place was empty, except for the bartender with his hands high, and Ed and Ben Stacy with their revolvers leveled.
Don't try anything, Paladin.
Using up your 2 years in a hurry, aren't you?
Didn't figure them as any more than a deposit.
Why waste them on me?
Not you, Paladin. The stage. Dan and Floyd are taking care of it right now. I'm just making sure nobody bothers them. Hey, Ben.
Yes?
Watch my door back there.
Sure.
You, bartender, keep your hands up and your mouth shut.
Driver and shotgunner out of the way.
Stanhope had you pegged.
He pegged me 2 years ago. Did you ever hear the one about if you have the name, you might as well play the game?
You don't have the name yet.
It won't be long now.
Well, this time there'll be no mistake about it. This time you'll serve out your sentence.
If they get me.
Well, they'll get you sooner or later.
Not before I make Stanhope sweat.
Are you going to make a fugitive out of Ben, too?
Why don't you shut up?
Big, simple Ben, whose only concern in life is protecting you. When a posse comes after you, do you figure him to stop the slug meant for you?
Helen, you got a big mouth.
And you've got a small brain. Taking this risk for some stupid idea of revenge. Revenge against a man who isn't worth it to begin with.
Hey, Ed, Floyd and Dan, they're coming. They got it.
Well, let's go, Ed. We got the strong box.
Put it back, Dan.
What?
Put it back, I said.
You gone crazy? You think we went through this whole thing for nothing?
For the last time, put it back and cut out.
We'll cut out, but we're taking the money with us, huh, Floyd? Lesson, you want to stop us.
If I have to.
Don't try it.
Thank you for showing up, men. This won't take long now. This is the deposition of the bartender at Three Forks Station, witnessed by Mr. Paladin here. Now, according to this, these men, Floyd Smith and Dan Angus, tried to rob the stage, and Ben and Ed Stacy stopped them, shot them down. That right, Mr. Paladin?
Yeah.
Nice work, Ed. Ben.
Thanks.
Now, you hold on, Sheriff. These men are liable to arrest. Wreck in my office, jailbreak.
That's right. I fine you both $25 for disturbing the peace.
Fine.
I'm the sheriff here, Mr. Stanhope. I hand out the sentences.
What about the damages to my office?
Well, I suggest that you deduct the repairs from the reward you posted.
Reward?
For the capture or death of anyone who attempts to rob an overland stage. That's the way it read, didn't it, Sheriff?
Sure did.
$3,000.
Coffee, Mr. Paladin.
Oh, well, thank you, Miss Wong.
Oh, thank you. It's nice to have you home. You see the cause of justice was served.
Well, I think so, Miss Wong. Of course, there are those who might question.
Oh?
You see, there was a little matter of convincing a certain bartender that he didn't see what he thought he saw. For a certain sum of money, you understand.
Oh, Isa, I understand. Bribery.
Now, Miss Wong... At any rate, I believe I can truthfully say that I...
Truthfully say?
I have no pain from conscience.
Gun Will Travel. Created by Herb Meadow and Sam Rolfe, is produced and directed by Norman McDonald and stars John Daner as Paladin with Ben Wright as Hayboy. Tonight's story was written by Albert Alley and adapted for radio by Ann Dowd. Featured in the cast were Harry Bartell, Jack Moyles, Ken Lynch, Barney Phillips, Lou Krugman, and Virginia Gregg. Hugh Douglas speaking. Join us again next week for Have Gun, Will Travel.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Now it's time for science fiction with a program called Dimension X, and this is one of the first science fiction shows that came on radio. It came on before X minus one. The program we're going to listen to today is Time and Time Again, and it dates from 7/12/1951.
Adventures in Time and Space, told in future tense.
National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction, bring you Dimension X. It happened during a routine skirmish in the Great War. Patrols advanced from the defense perimeter under jet cover and preceded by napalm throwers. The enemy defended in depth and mopped up with guided 98s fired from 40 miles to the rear. The blast area was 10 miles in circumference, and the medics didn't find much to pick up over 500 yards in.
Get in here. Man. Look out, it's lousy with mud.
Okay, man.
Get those men out. Yes, sir. Get a move on. Line them up. Come on. Easy, easy. You want to kill them? Okay, take it away.
They might have left these Joes where they was. Half of them won't last till the plane comes.
As long as they're alive, they'll be treated. Get off the tags, Travis. Start talking names.
Yes, sir. This one must have been 1,000 yards in.
Get his dog tag out.
What a mess. Here. Hartley Allen, Captain G5, Chem Research, AN73D, number SO2386943J.
Allen Hartley?
Allen Hartley.
Wonder if that could be the hunter that wrote Children of the Mist and Conqueror's Road.
Never heard of him. Major, I think maybe he's part conscious. Maybe I should give him another shot.
Go ahead, Sergeant. There isn't much else we can do for him. It's a rotten shame.
Ain't it always? Okay, Captain, give me your arm. There.
Can't stay in bed all day.
I remember that. Clear as if it were real.
Up and at 'em. Hit the deck.
Remarkably vivid. Strange.
Alan, you all right?
I'm all right. What's wrong with my voice? It's too high.
What are you doing? Practicing singing?
My voice has changed.
Is that all? You're growing up. Happy birthday, son.
Happy birthday?
Hey, wake up, son. Wake up.
I am awake.
Come on, out of bed.
I don't understand.
Breakfast waiting. Out of bed or I'll turn it over.
All right, all right. It's a dream.
Maybe, but you're wide awake now.
I am awake now.
Well, half awake anyway.
That's the Bell of St. Boniface, isn't it? What day is it?
Are you kidding? You forget today's your birthday?
No. No, I didn't forget.
Neither did I. Here, son. Happy 13th birthday. You won't guess what's in here.
A rifle. A light 22 rifle.
How'd you know that?
I remembered.
Did I spill the beans sometime? I could have sworn it'd be a surprise. Well, go on, open it. Like it?
Yeah, it's perfect, Dad.
I'll be shaving, Alan. Come down to breakfast when you're ready. It's a big day today. You're almost a man.
Almost.
You're still groggy. Snap out of it, Alan.
I will. There's a dream in it somewhere, but I'm not sure which.
What?
Never mind, Dad. I'll be right down for breakfast.
Now for coffee. Mrs. Stauber makes the best in town.
A black for me.
A what? You may be 13, Alan, but they're still a little young for coffee, especially black.
Oh, I wasn't thinking.
What are you going to do today, son?
I want to do some reading this morning, I guess.
That's always a good thing to do. After breakfast, suppose you take a walk down to the station and get me a Times.
Didn't it come?
What, the Times? They don't deliver. Be a good idea, though. Maybe I'll talk to Sam Ashman about it. Here's a half dollar, Alan. Get anything you want for yourself out of the change.
Thanks, Dad.
Finish your milk before you go.
Oh, sure, Dad.
And hurry back. I like to finish the crossword puzzle before lunch.
Here you are, Alan. One times. Tell your father the puzzle's a stinker.
Thanks, Mr. Ashburn.
Look out for the trucks when you cross the highway.
Oh, I'll go across Elton's lot shortcut.
Elton's? You'll have a hard time crossing there, son. There's four buildings on that block.
I thought they burned down.
Seen them this morning, big as life.
Oh, I guess that didn't happen yet.
What'd you say?
Oh, nothing, Mr. Ashburn. I was just muttering.
In my days, youngsters talked up.
Yes, sir. Oh, bye, Mr. Ashburn. Monday, August 6th, 1945. Okinawa 1, bombing Japan.
Hey, Alan, wait up.
Larry Morton. Hey, Larry!
Hi, Al. Hey, you want to have a catch or something?
No, I have some things I want to do at home.
Wow, get him. Fancy pants talk. Things I want to do at home.
Oh, go chase yourself around the block.
Go jump in a garbage can, will you?
Go take a flying jet to the moon.
Hey, that's a new one. A flying jet to the moon. Hey, you thought up a new one, Al.
Yeah.
Hey, how about us going swimming at the canoe clubs after?
Gee, I wish I could. I gotta stay home. Zafter.
You see the football movie at the Grand? Boy, what a team. Notre Dame.
I thought you liked Cornell.
Cornell? Ha, they couldn't even beat Vassar.
You're going to Cornell, aren't you?
Me? Cornell? Fat chance.
I'll bet you do.
I wouldn't take your money.
I know you wouldn't. You'll go to Cornell, all right.
Cornell. Far above Cayuga's waters, there's an awful smell.
Just the same. You'll go to Cornell. I've got to hurry, Larry.
Well, so long, Al. See ya.
So long, Larry. See ya.
I'm stuck in this corner. A seven-letter word to mix in proportion.
Titrate.
Huh? It fits. How'd you know that, Alan?
What? Oh, I read it somewhere, I guess.
Oh. What are you reading now, Tarzan again?
No, not Tarzan.
It's refreshing to see you with a book. Sometimes I think I ought to forbid comic books in the house. Yeah, they must be raising the devil with those bombing raids in Japan.
How long do you think the war in Japan will last, Dad?
Oh, I'll say the middle of 1946. We'll have to invade those islands foot by foot.
I wouldn't be surprised if the war was over very suddenly.
How, by magic? There isn't a thing on earth will make those Japanese surrender. You expect somebody to make a pass and it'll be all over by this afternoon?
That's just about it.
Miss Audley, excuse me. Could I see you for a minute?
Oh, hello, Mr. Gottschall. Sure.
That's Frank Gottschall, Dad?
That's right.
Excuse me. Didn't mean to disturb you, Mr. Hartley.
That's quite all right. It's a lovely day, isn't it, Mr. Gottschall?
The Lord's world is always beautiful.
Oh, of course, Mr. Gottschall.
Mr. Hartley, I wonder if you could lend me a gun and some bullets. Huh? My little dog's been hurt and it's been suffering. Something terrible.
Oh, it's too bad.
I want a gun to put the poor thing out of its pain.
Oh, of course. How would a 20-gauge shotgun do? You wouldn't want anything heavy.
I was hoping you'd let me have a little gun. Maybe so big.
A pistol?
So I could put it in my pocket. Wouldn't look right for a godly man to carry a hunting gun through town. I don't hold with killing innocent creatures. People wouldn't understand that it was for a work of mercy.
Of course I understand. You're a very religious man.
The whole world is evil, Mr. Hartley.
Sometimes it certainly looks like it. Well, I have a Colt 38 special from the auxiliary police outfit.
That's fine, fine.
You'll have to bring it right back, Mr. Gottschall. I might be called out.
Dad, wait a minute. I just remembered.
Remembered what, son?
Aren't there some cartridges left for the Luger? Then you wouldn't be without the Colt.
Hey, that's right. I've got a German automatic, Mr. Gottschall, I can let you have. That way I wouldn't get stuck.
Wait, Dad, I'll get it. I know where the cartridges are.
Well, be careful, son. Well, Mr. Gottschall, it sure turned out nice after all that rain.
Hello, police headquarters. This is Blake Hartley. Frank Gottschall, who lives on Campbell Street, has just borrowed a gun from me ostensibly to shoot a dog. What? No, he has no dog. He intends shooting his wife. Yes, I'll take out the firing pin. He'll walk home. If you hurry, you can get him in on time. Right.
Oh, there you are. What kept you, Alan?
I couldn't find the cartridges at first. I'll show Mr. Gottschall how it works. It's all loaded, ready to shoot. This is a safety. Just push it forward and up. There ain't shots in it.
Did you load the chamber, Alan?
Oh, sure. It's unsafe now. You understand how it works, Mr. Gottschall?
Yes, yes, I understand. Thank you, Mr. Hartley. Thank you, Sonny. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Gottschall. Return the gun when you're done.
Yes, I'll be done with it soon. Goodbye.
Alan, you shouldn't have loaded that gun.
I guess it's all over now. I had to keep you from falling with it. Didn't want you to see I took out the firing pin.
You what?
Gottschall didn't want that gun to shoot a dog. He's a fanatic. He sees visions, hears voices. The voices probably put him up to this. I'll submit that any man who holds intimate conversations with disembodied spirits isn't to be trusted with a gun. He wants to shoot his wife.
What are you talking about?
While I was upstairs, I called the police. I put a handkerchief over my mouth and told them I was you.
You? Why'd you have to do that?
I couldn't have told them. This is little Alan Hartley, 13 years old.
And suppose he really wants to shoot a dog. What kind of a mess will I be in then?
No mess, because of light. But you'll have to front for me. They give me a lot of cheap boy hero publicity, which I don't want.
This is crazy, Alan. This is absolutely crazy.
We'll have the complete returns in 20 minutes.
Mr. Hartley, Mr. Blake Hartley?
That's right.
I'm Detective Sergeant Kaborski from Homicide. Here's your Luger.
Thank you.
I don't know how you spotted that guy, but when we busted in, he was pointing that gun at his wife, swearing a blue streak because it wouldn't go off.
Well, I'm glad I was able to help.
They may have some kind of citation, Mr. Hartley.
Oh, I don't think that's necessary.
Well, in the department, we figure a little publicity never hurt nobody. Even a lawyer, huh?
I really prefer to have it kept quiet.
Well, whatever you say, we want you to drop around in the morning for a statement.
I'll be glad to.
Well, thanks, Mr. Hartley. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye, Sonny.
Goodbye, Sergeant. Why don't you take the citation, Dad?
Well, you were right. You saved that woman's life. Let's see you put back the firing pin.
Sure. There.
Suppose we have a little talk.
But I explained everything.
You did not. Yesterday, you wouldn't even have known how to take this pistol apart. Today, you've been using language and expressing ideas that are outside of everything you've ever known before. Now, I want to know.
Well, I hope you're not toying with a medieval notion of obsession.
What?
You see, I'm changed. When did you first notice this?
Last night you were still my little boy. This morning, I don't know. You've been strange all day. Alan, what's happened to you?
I wish I could be sure myself, Dad. You see, when I woke up this morning, all I could remember was lying on a stretcher injured by a bomb explosion. I was 43 years old and the year was 1975.
1975? That's right, you'll be 43 in 1975. But a bomb?
Yes, during the siege of Buffalo in the Third World War, I was the captain in G5 Scientific Warfare General Staff.
Buffalo? You mean Buffalo, New York?
Yes, there'd been a transpolar invasion of Canada. I was sent to the front to check on service failures of a new lubricating oil. I got hit by a bomb blast. I remember being picked up and getting a narcotic injection. The next thing I knew, I was in bed upstairs and it was 1945 again. And I was back in my own 13-year-old body.
Alan, you just had a nightmare to end all nightmares, that's all.
I thought it might be that at first, but I rejected it. It wouldn't fit the facts.
But it's ridiculous, all this Battle of Buffalo stuff. You picked it up listening to the radio. All the commentators have been going on about another war after this one. You've just got an undigested chunk of H.V. Kaltenborn born in your subconscious.
But that isn't everything. I remember 4 years of high school, 4 years at Cornell, 7 years as a reporter on the Philadelphia Record, 3 novels, Children of the Mist, Rose of Death, and Conqueror's Road. I wrote detective stories under a phony name. I worked in chemistry. You think a 13-year-old can dream up all that stuff?
But it's the only possible explanation.
Maybe, but I can speak 5 languages today that I couldn't yesterday. French, German, Chinese, Russian, and Spanish. Although I've got a Mexican accent you could cut with a knife.
But how did it happen? I can't believe it.
All I know is here I am. I've been reading up on time theories. Nobody seems to know much about them. Evidently, time exists parallel as another dimension. And I've got kicked backwards and somehow.
But how?
It may have been the radiations from the bomb. Or the narcotic injection. Or both together. But the fact remains I'm here with full knowledge of my future identity.
This is quite a shock, Alan.
But you do believe me, don't you?
Yes, I suppose I must. You seem so strange as if you weren't my son.
I'm your son, all right. The same body as yesterday. I've just had an educational shortcut.
Wait a minute. If you can remember the next 30 years, suppose you tell me when the war is going to end. This one against the Japs, I mean.
Sure. The Japanese surrender will be announced at exactly 7:01 p.m. on August 14th, the week from Tuesday. Better make sure we have plenty of grub in the house by then. Everything will be closed up tight till Thursday morning. Even the restaurants. I remember we had nothing to eat in the house but some scraps.
Tuesday week? That's pretty sudden, isn't it?
Not after today.
What do you mean, what happened today?
Plenty. Oh, what time is it, Dad?
11:16.
Is your watch right?
To the second, why?
It'll come at exactly 11:17:40.
What'll come?
The radio announcement.
What are you getting at? Something important on the radio? We'll see.
Don't bother, Dad. It won't work. I remember we had a tube burned out.
Yeah, there is something wrong. What is this announcement of yours?
I memorized it in journalism school at Columbia in 1954. What time is it?
11:18.
They're breaking into the programs now. President Truman has just announced that an atomic bomb has been dropped on the Japanese industrial city of Hiroshima. The bomb was dropped 16 hours ago, and the announcement was delayed to ascertain the results of the explosion. A man named John Howard Peterson read the announcement from the Washington newsroom of NBC.
I don't believe it.
No? Listen. That's the burnt plate factory whistle and the bells at St. Boniface. Next, the whistle at the volunteer firehouse.
And it's true. It is true.
Sure. Then Larry Morton came by on his bicycle.
Hey, Al, you hear? You hear about the bomb? An atomic bomb.
Yeah, we heard.
Boy, atomic bomb. Oh, boy. I gotta go find my pop. He's on the golf course. Bye, Al. Bye, Mr. Hartley.
You knew. You knew about it.
The next bomb hits Nagasaki.
I thought that stuff about atomic energy was so much fantasy. What? Was that the kind of bomb that got you?
That was a firecracker compared to the one that got me. It was a guided 98, exploded 10 miles away.
And that's going to happen in 30 years?
I remember it.
How about, well, how about me? Oh, wait, never mind. I don't think I better know when I'm going to die.
I couldn't tell you anyway. I had a letter from you just before I left for the front. You were 78 then, and you were still hunting and fishing and flying your own plane.
But another war and fought on American soil. Alan, I wish this hadn't happened to you.
It happened. I remember it. But if I can help it, I'm not going to get killed in any battle of Buffalo.
But if you remember it, if time exists as a parallel dimension, then every tick we're getting closer to that Third World War.
Dad, you know what I remember when Gutcho came to borrow that gun?
Well, I suppose that you suspected him and warned me.
No, that wasn't it. The other time, the first time, when I was really 13. I wasn't home. I'd been swimming at the canoe club with Larry Morton. When I got home about half an hour from now, I found the house full of cops.
But if the gun didn't fire...
What makes you think it didn't? Gutcho talked the 38 out of you, went home, shot his wife four times in the body, once behind the ear, and used the sixth shot to blow his own brains out.
That's what you remember?
Yes, but now it hasn't happened because I warned you. Dad, I found out the future can be changed.
One man can't change the whole future.
I stopped the murder and suicide.
I know some,
but... 30 years to work, I can stop a world war. I'll have the means.
The means?
Unlimited wealth and influence. I've got a good memory, Dad. Wrote a list out this afternoon. Look at this.
Assault, jet pilot, citation, ponder, middle ground, counter... What is this, code?
Horses! That's a list of Kentucky Derby winners from 1946 to 1970.
You sure?
I learned that list on a bet at the Officers Club in Cincinnati in 1971. Assault paid 8-1. You figure out what we can take in.
Oh, but gambling...
Isn't it gambling? It's a sure thing. When we get rolling, we'll make the Rockefellers look like pikers.
Assault at 8-1. I suppose I could scrape up $5,000. In 10 years, that'll make a lot of money. Any other little thing you have in mind, Alan?
By 1952, we start building a political organization here in Pennsylvania. In 1960, I think we can elect you president.
Of course, president? Isn't that going a little too far?
Why not? Who wouldn't vote for a politician who is always right? Besides, that's one thing we've got to change. In 1960, we had a man in the White House who was good to his wife and sang a nice tenor. And that's about all. He fouled up so completely, we ended up at war. I think President Hartley might be a little more trusted to take a strong line.
Well, I don't know anything about international decisions.
I do. I know all the wrong ones. If we can stop a murder, with time, we can stop a war.
How do I start?
Well, as I remember, just after that bomb announcement, you got a phone call from the City Fusion Party about the next election.
Well, there is a lot of talk about a reform ticket.
That call is going to be important, Dad. It's the turning point. You've got... There it is.
Well, what do I do?
Answer it. Go ahead.
But, Alan, I...
Don't worry. I'll tell you what to say. Go ahead.
Hello? Yes, this is Blake Hartley. Judge Crimmins? Well, just a moment. Alan, he's asking me to run.
Oh, my head.
Alan, what's the matter? Alan.
Oh.
He passed out. Alan, what do I do now? Alan, listen to me. Alan, what's the matter? Alan!
Thank you.
Hartley. Captain Hartley. Captain Hartley.
He was all right, Doctor. I gave him a shot and he was all right.
He's dead. All right, Sergeant, make up the tag.
Yes, sir.
Hartley, Allen, Captain. Dead August 8th,
1975. Allen, what happened? Allen!
Huh?
Allen, are you all right?
Hi, Dad.
I've got Judge Crimmins on the phone. What do I tell him?
What?
Allen, are you all right? You passed out.
Sure, I'm all right. Hey, today's my birthday, isn't it? What did you get me, Dad? Huh? What did you get me?
Allen, are you all right?
Sure, I'm okay. What did you get for my birthday, huh?
Don't you remember the Third World War?
What Third World War? Gee, Dad, what's the matter? You're looking at me funny.
Judge Crimmins, I'll have to call you back. Goodbye. You don't remember. You're back again, aren't you? Back to 13 years old.
Sure, I'm 13 today. For corn's sakes, Dad.
You must have died up there. It was only a mind transfer. That means now I'm on my own. I have to do it myself without your help.
Help for what? Oh, if it's the grass, I said I'd cut it tomorrow.
No, it isn't the grass. I've got to save your life, Allen. I can't let you die that way in 1975.
What are you talking about, Dad? You sound goofy.
I've got to change it all by myself.
Change what?
Never mind, Allen. You don't know yet. Come on, let's have lunch.
Sure, Dad. Hey, how about my present now? What did you get me for my birthday?
Hey, in a minute, son. Go on in.
Hurry up, Dad.
All right. Now, where'd I put that list of horses?
You have just heard another adventure into the unknown world of the future. The world of...
Dimension X.
Homecoming is a joyous word. But when the home you're returning to is a burned-out radioactive planet, and when you cannot even imagine what terrible changes you'll find there, the word then takes on a very different meaning. Next week, Dimension X brings you a strange story called Dwellers in Silence.
Dimension X is brought to you each week by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of the magazine Astounding Science Fiction. Today, Dimension X has presented Time and Time Again, written for radio by Ernest Canoy, and the story by H. Beam Piper. Featured in the cast were David Anderson as Allen and Joseph Curtin as his dad. Your host was Norman Rose, music by Albert Berman. Dimension X is produced by William Welch and directed by Fred Way.
Dragnet, the story of your police force, is next on NBC.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.